I think it's continuing to provide opportunities for students. So it's the exposures that they can have as students to the diversity of the profession and what it offers. We run into a number of students who are interviewing that are still looking for experiences in the profession. And so just learning what those opportunities are, whether you want to do research or you want to be in a practice or a specialty practice or teach, all those opportunities. We offer here at Purdue a VM, Veterinary Medicine 102 class for undergrad students. And so they can come and listen to speakers from all various aspects of the profession.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. BinSentry, the most trusted feed monitoring solution in the world. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet. The National Pork Board is committed to improving the health of the U.S. swine herd. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers.
Hello, and welcome to the SwineNet Podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today, and I have Dr. Brett Marsh as my guest. Dr. Marsh is the Dean of Purdue University College of Veterinary Medicine. Dr. Marsh served as Indiana's state veterinarian for 30 years, where he led initiatives in biosecurity, animal disease traceability, disaster preparedness, and gained national recognition for his expertise and leadership. It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Marsh to our show.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, today we're going to discuss Dr. Marsh's thoughts on the future of veterinary medicine, animal health prevention, and what challenges we face in our industry. But before we begin, Dr. Marsh, can you just take a few minutes to introduce yourself to our audience and share your background and your career path?
Oh, indeed. Well, I grew up in central Indiana. And at the time, by the time I was a freshman in high school, I decided I wanted to become a veterinarian. And at that time, if you lived in a state with a veterinary college, that was your college. And so I applied to Purdue. I came to Purdue in animal sciences as a first-generation college student. I really had no idea what I was doing and got involved in some with some really great faculty members. And they helped me a great deal as I got started into animal sciences and then on into the veterinary program. Finished the program and actually did my externship in St. Francis, Kansas. I was working in a beef cattle practice in St. Francis, Kansas. And as I finished up that experience, and actually during my pre-vet days, I worked on a ranch in the Sand Hills of Nebraska. So I was going to do beef cattle practice in the Western United States. And as I finished up my fourth year here at Purdue, I thought, well, maybe my focus has been a little narrow. So I began to look to other options. So I actually applied for a position with the state of Indiana in public service. And I said, well, I'll give it a year. And 40 years later, I finished up. So I finished up as state veterinarian on a Friday at midnight and started in my role as dean at 8 a.m. the following Monday morning. But it's a wonderful profession and great opportunities for all of us. And so it's a very exciting time. And I'm certainly glad to get a chance to visit with you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for being on our show. And it's exciting to hear, you know, about your transition and kind of the what you maybe were. I guess one of my first question would be, what surprised you, you know, taking over the role of dean that maybe you weren't expecting?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because I've never been a faculty member. So working with faculty and understanding their issues and how best to accomplish the task of everything from promotion and tenure to the teaching responsibilities to the research responsibilities and all the multiple hats they wear and all the juggling takes place to make sure all that happens. I'm proud of them and what they accomplish for us here at Purdue and better understand the challenges they're met with. And then, of course, our students are exceptional. I'm really proud of our students. We take 84 students each fall. And the fall class, I had the opportunity to be a part of the admissions process for this first round. So I called each of them individually to invite them to be a part of our program. And so that was exciting for me because you got all the cheers and all the excitement about receiving a phone call and being entered into the program. So, and then just last Saturday, I went through my first graduation since my own. Went through the first graduation of our veterinary class and our veterinary technicians or nurses here. So it's an exciting time. I tell people that veterinary medicine taught us to be lifelong learners, and I'm just trying to uphold my end of the deal.
Very good.
At Nexus, powered by SAM, we redefine livestock nutrition with science-backed innovations that enhance performance, maximize efficiency, and promote sustainability. We connect producers with the future of animal health and productivity through cutting-edge feed technologies and environmentally conscious solutions. By addressing the demand for efficient, sustainable nutrition, we reflect SAM Nutrition's commitment to excellence, delivering premium, scientifically proven solutions that drive results.
Well, it is exciting to go to graduations. I recently got to go to my own son's college graduation, and so it does bring back memories of when, you know, you were sitting in that chair and you know, what you were thinking with your whole future ahead of you. So that's kind of a fun experience as a mother, for sure. And I'm sure as the person up there speaking to the college and, you know, having a role in their education in their future. So
oh, it's an exciting time. And I've encouraged our students. I had an opportunity a few years ago. I was elected as treasurer of the AVMA. And that put me on the executive board. And so they invited the newly elected board members to Schaumburg, Illinois, for a training session for new board members to be better board members. And one of the presenters of this training session asked us, "How did you get here?" And I've never forgotten the question. And I think it's important we all ask ourselves from time to time, who all contributed to our opportunities and what decisions did we make and those turning points all along the way that are so pivotal to getting us to where we are. So when he asked us the question, "How did you get here?" he wasn't interested, of course, in whether we flew to or drove to Schaumburg. He was wanting us to pause for a moment and say, "So who were the contributors, whether it's family or friends or teachers or faculty members or colleagues?" And, you know, I also tell our students that, you know, they, it's important for them to find mentors, but I still seek mentors, even in my career. You're always looking for those individuals who can help and provide guidance and instruction, and it's really important. So it's exciting to see our students go across the graduation stage and get hooded and launch into their new careers.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very exciting. So let's dig into vet med just a little bit. What was, what did you see or experience when you first got kind of back into the, university, and what are our challenges in terms of veterinary medicine, maybe as a whole, not just in terms of animal agriculture, since we're the Swinet podcast, we'll dig into that too. But what was your first vision of the future of vet med?
Well, I think it's continuing to provide opportunities for students. So it's the exposures that they can have as students to the diversity of the profession and what it offers. We run into a number of students who are interviewing that are still looking for experiences in the profession. And so just learning what those opportunities are, whether you want to do research or you want to be in a practice or a specialty practice or teach, all those opportunities. We offer here at Purdue a VM, Veterinary Medicine 102 class for undergrad students. And so they can come and listen to speakers from all various aspects of the profession. So I want to make sure they understand what those roles are. And of course, having worked closely with the agricultural sector, it's important that they understand what those opportunities are. We're a major agricultural state. We rank in the top five in many animal agriculture products. They're number one in commercial ducks, number two in eggs, number three in pounds of turkey, and number five in swine. And yet we're the smallest state geographically west of the Appalachian Mountains. So there's a lot going on in a rather small state that many of our students may not be aware of. We have dairies just north of us between here and Chicago that have over 15,000 dairy cows on the site, and most people may not even know they exist. So whether it's in that area or if they want to do shelter medicine or if they want to do exotics. We have great zoos around the state, for example, if they want to take a look at those. So I think those are some of the challenges. And then, as I mentioned before, matching that up with our faculty capabilities and talents so that we can cover that waterfront and they can see those experiences. So it's a great opportunity, and I hope to bring from my previous experience some of those exposures and opportunities, because we have great opportunities here. But of course, Purdue's reach is global. So we go around the globe. I was just in conversations, for example, in the last few weeks with some of the professors at Athens and Athens, Greece. And so there's conversations about what Purdue Vet Med might do for them as they take a look at a veterinary college in Athens. So the opportunities are enormous. I told somebody the other day, we're met with insurmountable opportunities. So for both our students, our faculty, and our college.
Yeah, and that's very optimistic. And it's what you make of those opportunities, right? Is how you garnish those relationships and make a network and a connection.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's important, and maybe if there's no other, just my own personal example of just launching into an area. I mean, there weren't too many that went into public service. My classmates thought I was absolutely crazy and say, you're throwing your degree away and that sort of thing. And I said, no, we just apply it in a different way. And I think it's important for our students to see the diversity of our profession, and they'll see it and they'll enjoy it over time. And those 40 years will get by very quickly.
Yes, they do. And I think maybe we, some veterinarians, may not see the value as much. You know, certainly I have a huge respect for, you know, state veterinarians. I worked with many state veterinarians across my career, and somebody that's involved in food animal medicine, you know, that's really a key to what we do in business in terms of health papers and regulatory medicine and programs to keep, you know, TB and brucellosis and, you know, pseudorabies. I was right on the end of the pseudorabies eradication. And I saw how having a vaccine and having, you know, a tool to help eradicate that disease was really important. And we have some work to do on catching up to eradication of disease, right? It's been 30 years since we were able to do that. And I think that's an area of opportunity that we certainly have in food animal medicine today.
No, I think you're exactly right. And we did have the good fortune with pseudorabies to have vaccines, differentiable vaccines. And I know that the national pork industry took a look at what the top six items were as they prepared for an eventual disease, a foreign animal disease event. And one of them I encourage to put in the top five or six would be vaccine. Whether it's for African swine fever, for example. Unfortunately, countries around the globe are challenged with it and having difficulty getting it contained. We obviously have ample swine, naive swine populations in the United States. We have massive feral swine populations. And so I'm encouraged by some of the work I read about and hopeful that we'll have those tools, because there isn't a country on the globe that's had great success. It's still are challenged with that virus as it moves across the globe. So with the size and importance of our pork industry, having those tools in the toolbox in advance are going to be extremely valuable, particularly with like ASF, because we've encouraged producers and practitioners and extension educators and others to watch for vesicular diseases for decades. But then you get an ASF and it won't present that way. And I'm really concerned that we'll discover it long after it's been in country. We didn't get it diagnosed early enough. And so we're trying to lead from behind, and that will present some huge challenges for us as a country.
Yeah, I agree. And that particular disease can really look like, you know, some domestic diseases that we encounter. And so, we certainly might miss that diagnosis. You know, there's some initiatives that are ongoing in terms of maybe doing some diagnostic monitoring and sampling, really to, you know, what Dr. Roger Main has been working on, to try to maybe do some foresight in proving that we're negative for the disease and having ongoing monitoring that will help us kind of in the background diagnose it maybe before we actually see outbreaks that you know, look different to us.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's why I've been encouraged with the SHIP program, the Swine Health Improvement Plan. I was involved in it before transitioning to this role, but want to keep a watch on it very closely, because I think it was it's really a great opportunity for the swine industry to protect themselves and to learn as much as they can about what's going on in their populations. It may not be inexpensive to accomplish some of these tasks, but on the other hand, it could save the industry, frankly, because again, I'm concerned that we'll diagnose it too late. And then when we're trying to come from behind with the movements of swine in the United States, the movements into Indiana alone, various, whether it's breeding stock or pigs for finish, et cetera, we have packing plants in this part of the country. So we have pigs coming in from all over. And we've seen significant growth. A few years ago, we were bringing in 2.8 million pigs a year for finish. Now it's over 5 million. And so the numbers that are moving, if it's not diagnosed early, it could be catastrophic. So I appreciate the SHIP program, and it started with foreign animal diseases. I'm reading that there's more conversation about taking a look at an endemic disease or two under that umbrella. But I think we can learn from the poultry industry on what they've done with NPIP and apply some of those same principles in another important sector.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that came to mind as you were sharing that is, the avian influenza, and what do you see as in your position? What could we be doing in terms of biosecurity? What can we be doing more to try to prevent disease transmission and movement?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've worked hard at biosecurity for years. We talk about a lot of it here at the college because we run a hospital. We have small animal and equine and farm animal. We have field services going to farms. And so we're constantly looking at biosecurity, even in our own structure. But certainly on poultry operations, swine operations, et cetera, it varies by commodity. You know, when we dealt with H5N1 on dairy farms, fortunately not in Indiana, but biosecurity on a dairy farm is very different than what you would experience in a poultry or swine operation. And so encouraging all commodities to heighten their level of biosecurity. I also have been watching closely the metapneumovirus in turkeys and other poultry here in our state. And even with the biosecurity practices that have been in place, trying to prevent highly pathogenic avian influenza, that virus entered those buildings and walked right through many of our turkey operations here in Indiana. I think we're up over 230 diagnosed cases. So it's moved very quickly. And even when we thought things were rather biosecure because we thought we had things in pretty good shape. So there's still some details, and we have an epidemiology branch here in our college, and I've encouraged them to take a look at we're missing something. There are ways that these viruses are moving. We've talked about traffic, and we've talked about both foot traffic and vehicular traffic. We looked at feed, we've looked at ventilation systems, and on. But I think that virus, the metapneumovirus, when it entered these poultry operations, these are not range birds. They're in house situations, and so there's more to be learned in that space. And with certainly the tools like vaccine, we have a team here that are actually developing some vaccines for H5N1, both in poultry and dairy. I know there are trade implications, but I want to make sure that tool's in the toolbox because it may be that tool that saves the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are tough diseases when there's some, regulatory and trading implications. And so I'm certainly not, up to speed on all of that, but it's a challenge that the poultry industry definitely has. And I think the networking and having people like you with expertise in, regulatory medicine coming to veterinary schools, having a diagnostic lab oversight as well, can really help us to understand how can we make this work and come forward with some solutions.
Well, I certainly hope so. And, our industries are so well developed. And frankly, there's a reliance around the globe on our product. And tariff issues aside, our buyers and our consumers globally appreciate and enjoy our product. And just to make sure that we have an available protein source, that we haven't left our guard down. Again, back to African swine fever when it was diagnosed in the Dominican Republic and Haiti on the island of Hispaniola, that presents unique challenges for the United States. And so I know there have been intensified efforts. I do get a little concerned with some of the changes at USDA, with the numbers of personnel that have left those ranks, that I'm hopeful that we haven't left our guard down too far, because these viruses could be devastating to our economy and to our populations. But I'm hopeful we can also get to a point where we can use some of the tools we have without trade consequences. You know, so if we were to vaccinate for a highly pathogenic avian influenza, that we could continue to trade in the broiler industry, for example, because the losses are so significant. And I know that I have heard, for example, that the loss of revenue from sales of broiler product internationally would be far, far greater than what we've already spent to contain the virus for all the depopulation, et cetera. But their costs are measured, in my view, in different ways. I mean, in addition to just the dollars and cents, the downtime is so significant, and this would be true in swine operations as well, that there's just nothing to sell because there's nothing in the buildings while you're going through that whole process. And then, again, it's not quantified in dollars and cents, but the toll on the people. I've seen this, and it's very difficult. You know, when your task is to keep birds alive, and you're destroying birds on property trying to contain a virus, it's very challenging on producers and others involved. So I hope we can keep the tools in the toolbox. There's a day we'll need them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, in animal health, we certainly have challenges when it comes to depopulation, mass depopulation, and, you know, for animal health issues. And it is challenging for producers, for veterinarians, for workers, for staff. And I think we're much, much better in terms of awareness and the tools that we have to support mental health than we would have been 10 years ago. And I experienced, you know, PED was a devastating disease, and we really didn't have the knowledge and the tools that we do today to help people through that. So we've come a long way, but we have a long way to go in terms of you know, just being open and honest about helping people and listening, and you know, getting through things like that. So, farmers and agriculture people in agriculture are very stoic and strong, and so you know, that's not something that we've always been taught or shown, I guess, to talk about, you know, how we are and sensitive things, feelings. And so I think in all of ag, we need to think about that.
We certainly do. And it can be quite challenging. And, you know, when these reports fall out of the paper, even like PED and other things, those events continue to go on long after the press is. So it's months long, and it can really have an impact. And that's why I think all the preparedness on the front end, and I want our students to be aware of that here. And this is what it takes to be prepared. And we worked with producers throughout our state and said, is this your, we took aerial images, for example, and said, is this your barn? Yes, that's my swine barn. Okay, what's your plan for your barn? What's your plan for that site? And I'll be honest, I've been struck. We actually had an exercise a couple of years ago here in Indiana, and I thought we were going to make it simple because we just picked a finisher. It wasn't a sow operation, wasn't a farrowing operation. It was just a finisher, 5,000 head, a rather new building. And so we started through this mock exercise, et cetera. And as we began to review the building, there are no roll-up doors. There's no way to really get in the building. Everything's through a standard sized door or the chute for the hogs to come in and out. But I said, so equipment repairs or no, has to go through that door. And I'm like, oh, so if you have 5,000 head and they're inside, how do we deal with them? Because so that's when we began to take a look at everything from foaming to even electrocution or other things as we move them out of the building, because there's no way to really get in a building in that sense. So I hope that even our contractors who build these structures begin to think about the eventuality of a challenge like that, because just physically moving 5,000 head out of a building, dead or alive, I prefer dead and then euthanized on the outside rather than trying to drag them out or otherwise, but just some things like that that come up in exercises they wouldn't otherwise think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I have also been involved in some of those and some foresight in depopulation events as we're designing and building new barns is definitely an area we didn't think about 10 years ago. And I think having some more exercises like those help us to think through, different types of facility doors, et cetera, you can work around biosecurity. We've made them so you can only go through this door to try to prevent any kind of, making it easy to not go through a specific process. But in addition, we've made it hard to think through how do we clean, how do we repair, how do we, move large equipment in and out. So that's, again, another area of opportunity and networking that we can do, because I'm not sure, I've probably met more engineers being a podcast host than I ever did for 25 years of being a veterinarian working in swine units. And so that's the area of, networking we have and trying to get the experts to help us make things better down the road.
I think there's great opportunity and just thinking through all those aspects, because I've seen it in the poultry industry. They've made changes because they've been through this and say, floor birds are one thing, but when you have layer operations, that's quite another task. And so not all poultry are the same in a lot of ways, and including how you depopulate and remove birds from buildings and cages. And so unfortunately, we've had experience in that area and they've made adjustments, but I'd rather that the swine industry have learned it in advance rather than learning it on the fly.
Sunhee is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us on sunhee.com for more information.
Well, I want to circle back around to students and, our audience are professionals in, swine medicine, from nutritionists to, researchers, people, teachers at universities, veterinarians, and then certainly producers and people who are working, on the animal level in the barns. And so what can we do out here in the industry to encourage new veterinarians to come through, Purdue and be interested in swine medicine?
No, I think that's a great point. And one is, if nothing else, just to your point, encourage them. Because I hear individuals that say, well, it's too hard to get in. I just won't even try. And I understand it's competitive. We had 1,956 applications for our 84 slots. So it's very competitive. But on the other hand, I tell them that on average, the students will apply to 5 colleges. And so there are a number of colleges looking at those same individuals. So I encourage them to apply to gain that experience in advance. And if it's in a swine farm, that's great. Or if they have an interest in agriculture. I'm struck, for example, in our state that in the 2023 exhibition season, there were 83,000 animals shown by 4-H'ers in our state. So they have some exposure. They showed a dog or a horse or a llama or a pig or a steer, whatever it might be. And if we can encourage them to stay in that animal space because they were there, and maybe they chose to go lots of different directions, but we want to make sure veterinary medicine is one of those and that they understand that there are opportunities in that space. Also, to your point, I think it's just exposing them to what it is. There many of our students have never been in a layer house or in a swine sow farm or entities like that. And so part of our intention is to expose them to those opportunities, because I know we have students that had no idea they would have an interest until once exposed. And once they've seen what that is, for example, I had a student who interviewed here who's from Queens, New York. And so I said, well, what would you choose to do with your veterinary degree? And she said, I'm going to go into dairy practice. I said, from Queens, New York? And I said, where did you get exposed to dairy? And she said, well, the YMCA camps in my area host farm camps, and you go to farms. And I said, really? So I said, well, yeah, you could go and visit a farm and you've got a day of it or a week of it or whatever. And she said, we went to a dairy farm and I got so intrigued by it that I started working at the university dairy. And that's what I want to do. And she's from Queens, New York. But if it hadn't been for that exposure, she would have no idea what we're even talking about. So I want to make sure our students have that broad opportunity to see, and particularly here in the Midwest, there's lots of agriculture, lots of opportunities to see that side of it. There's always opportunities for small animal practice, et cetera. But particularly in the space where I've worked, I think it's important they understand what those are, and that through my former work, we have connections with those practices and those producers to give them that kind of experience. So we hope to broaden that. I'm also intrigued by a program I understand occurs at some of the veterinary colleges that I was not aware of, but it's basically an early admissions program for students who have that interest. And we don't have that here currently at Purdue. And I want to explore that opportunity. It's my understanding that students in other colleges, veterinary colleges, that once they start that track, that actually their scholarship opportunities are rather strong because the commodity entities are looking to support students with those interests. So we want to encourage those in lots of different ways. And if nothing else, as I mentioned, just to make sure they don't get discouraged too early, to stay with it and to continue to learn and see what those opportunities are. Yeah, the number is big of applicants, but it was likely big when you applied and when I applied. I know it was. So it's been a large pool for a long time. We have, in my view, we have a very distinguished university and a distinguished college. We want to make sure they recognize the opportunities and the breadth of those opportunities for their careers.
Well, I think the story about the young woman from Queens is just excellent, you know, very inspiring. You know, you never know what small touch is going to help steer some young, mind into our area of expertise. And I have a couple of really close friends that didn't grow up on a farm, didn't grow up around agriculture, that have been very successful swine veterinarians and other disciplines, epidemiologists, but working in our industry. And so, you know, I think a challenge out to our listeners is, you know, take that time to even have that conversation with the person beside you on the airplane, or somebody that just asks in your community, you know, can I ride with you one day? Can I go see what you do? Get involved in your school. 4-H has always been a great, you know, FFA, great agricultural groups, but who knew about the YMCA doing a farm tour? That's excellent, right?
Yeah, that was news to me. And I said, well, gosh, we could do that in Indiana or anywhere, because it doesn't take very long, or, you know, even though we're an agricultural state, you certainly can't make the assumption that just because we have rural areas of the state that applicants to our college understand agriculture. I'm encouraged by, you know, again, the children who exhibit animals and the passion they have for that. And if they didn't have a passion for it, they wouldn't show a pig at the fair. But they at least have that much exposure. Can we capitalize on that as well? Or FFA, we have the National FFA headquarters here in Indiana. So we want to work with those groups as well for those that have an interest in exposure early, but then to expose those who may not have, because I had veterinarians who worked on my team at BOA, had no idea they would end up working for the agricultural sector. It wasn't anything they knew anything about, but once exposed, they became passionate about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're rounding out our time today. Again, this has been Dr. Brett Marsh. He's the Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine at Purdue. If you have a comment or a question for Dr. Marsh or for us about our podcast show, just send that through on your podcast platform. And if you'd enjoyed listening to us today, give us a thumbs up, please. And so before we kind of finish our time, is there any last thing or shout out that you want to give on to our audience on today? And then we'll dive into our last three questions.
Well, I think the main shout is thanks for what you do. I think it's fantastic, whether it's genetics, nutrition, veterinary medicine, production sites, et cetera. It's a vitally important part of our economy, of our social fabric, of the success of our country and globe. And I'm just grateful to all the listeners and all the pieces that they contribute to the overall success of these sectors. It takes a lot of pieces to come together, and everyone has a role. And so my thanks to everyone for their continuing contributions.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaxinova, formulate to your needs. Custom-made vaccines. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Uniferon 200 from Pharmacosmos, the iron dextrin for baby pigs, which promotes faster growth. Better production performance starts with Eastman Choline Chloride. Visit Eastman.com. A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes Nephironine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
So as a hallmark of our Swine It podcast, we ask our guests some three questions at the end of our show to get that to know them a little bit better and to think a little bit more in depth about maybe something that you've encountered. So the first one is, what's a book or resource that you use, your go-to in your area of expertise?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, one of the things I continue to follow is actually SHIC, the Swine Health Information Center. And if you're in the swine world, that's a piece you ought to be looking at, because I think it's really, when it was first established, and Paul Sundberg and others, and I said, gosh, in 5 years, you won't be able to live without it, because it will gather information that will inform this population both domestically and internationally. And I think it's become a great resource. And now Paul's changed and there's new hands there, and it's in great hands. But I think that continuing effort to gain information, to do the research, to be nimble enough to do it quickly as needed, and then share that information is a great resource for this sector. It's unique to the sector. You know, there are other research initiatives, et cetera, with other commodities, but I think SHIC does it as well as I have seen. So I use it as a resource and encourage others to take a look at it if you're in that space, or it may be a model for others in other spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good one. And so for our audience, if you haven't checked it out, they have a great website, very easy to navigate, SHIC. It's SHIC, Swine Health Information Center, and there's a lot of really useful information. My favorite part of that is a domestic and a foreign animal disease report monthly that kind of keeps us abreast of what's going on with those, you know, ASF and FMD. And so no other place really that I have found that's specific to swine, that it's an easy access area. So yeah, great one.
Oh, it's a great resource.
So our next question is, what's something, a book or resource that you have that's not in your area of expertise? Maybe a book you've read recently or some conference you've been to that you think might be of interest to our audience?
Yeah, that's a great question. I thought about that one a bit, and it's actually a book that has a little age on it, but I refer back to it. It's the book Good to Great by James Collins. And I've read it, and I've read it again, and I have actually a copy where I put tabs on the pages of the ones, of the references I want to go back to, because I think there are some real fundamental pieces in that book that talk about the success of businesses of all types. And I used it in the private sector. I've taken a look at it as I apply it. My new role here as dean. But there are some key fundamental pieces that differentiate those who are good from those that can become great and how to get there. So my Good to Great book, I actually, in previous role, bought that book for staff members so that we were all on the same page, because, again, it has a little age on it, but I think those principles survive time.
Yeah, it is. It is a good fundamental resource to have in terms of leadership and just seeing teams really work together and be so successful, and you understand a bit more about how that works, and one small change can make a difference, right?
That's right. I had a former governor bought them for all his cabinet members, and we had already distributed it in our agency. So whether you're in the private sector or the public sector, there are fundamental pieces. And I thought the thing that really made it valuable is it wasn't necessarily Jim Collins' opinion, but rather the research that they had done that said these are the reasons why these companies or entities were successful. And so there's a lot of books about an individual's opinion about how to move it forward, but I appreciated the research behind his book.
Yeah, a scientist would definitely point that out. Yeah, very good. All right. And so our last one is, what characteristic or attribute sets successful professionals apart from others?
I think listening. I think just listening. There's a lot of talk, but there has to be a lot of good listening too, and understanding the issues, whether it's the consumer of pork, or it's in a practice setting, or it's listening to our students and or faculty, et cetera. But I think it's one of the things that listening. It's important to not make it in my role, for example. I try never to make anything about me. But I'm trying to listen to understand you and how I can help you be successful in your role, whatever it might be. Might be a student, might be a faculty member, might be a colleague. But I think the attribute that I try to exercise, I'm not always successful. I have to work at it, but just listening and understanding, therefore, and trying to better understand what that issue is so we can find the best possible solution. So I've encouraged people to listen, and I try to practice it myself.
I think that's great advice. And Dr. Marsh, I remember the first question I asked you was what surprised you, or what was different about coming as your role as dean compared to what were you were expecting? And it was listening to your faculty, right? Not having been a faculty member. And so, yeah, I think you show that attribute is important to you, and you do you do it. So that was great.
I've enjoyed the opportunity. Thanks for the question.
Thank you so much. And again, Dr. Brett Marsh, Dean of the College of Vet Med at Purdue University. Thanks everybody for listening.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.